This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. Later in the program, Focus on Technology looks at flying short distances on small electric planes. First, we'll talk about redrawing congressional districts in Ohio. For years, there have been attempts to make the process nonpartisan, but so far, none of the proposals have been approved. Another proposal is expected in Ohio. We're going to talk about it and the history of drawing congressional districts. Joining me are League of Women Voters of the Cincinnati Area Vice President Elizabeth Brown, Chief Policy Analyst with Common Cause Ohio, Catherine Terser, and Charles W. Ebersold and Florence Whipcomb Ebersold Professor of Constitutional Law at The Ohio State University Moritz College of Law, Daniel Takagi. You can join the conversation by calling us. Our number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Certainly glad to have you all here. I'd like to start out, and Professor Takagi, maybe you can start out answering this question for us. How are the districts, congressional districts in Ohio, drawn right now?
Sure. Well, congressional districts are drawn through legislation that's passed through both houses of the state legislature and then signed by the governor. And what's frequently happened, the reason that this is a problem, is that one party controls both chambers of the state legislature and the governor's office, which means that one party controls the entire redistricting process, in effect, and can draw lines that not only maximize that party's share of seats, but effectively give the dominant party a lock on power, at least a lock on the state's congressional districts, for the remainder of the decade. And what we've seen here in Ohio, when both Democrats and Republicans have drawn the lines, is that we don't have competitive districts. And when you don't have competitive districts, when we know the result of every election before a single vote is cast, well, there's no real accountability to we the people who are supposed to be in charge of our democracy ultimately.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, Marianne, I think it's important for the listeners, many probably know but some don't, that the districts have to be redrawn every 10 years when we have a census. That's why we talk about redrawing them. You have to adjust them for population shifts. So we have a census in every year that ends in a zero. We had one in 2010, and there'll be another in 2020. And it's after the 2020 census that we'll be redrawing the districts again. So our hope is that we'll be able to have a reform proposal through that will make that drawing at that point in time a fairer process than what happened after the 2010 census.
Well, and I sometimes think people get this idea when you say the legislature draws the maps, that they actually draw the maps. But really what happens is that political consultants do the map making rather than the state legislatures. The state legislature approves the maps. So in 2011, the state district lines and the congressional district lines were drawn by Heather Mann, who's now Heather Mann Blessing, married to Lou Blessing III. Who's in from this neck of the woods, and a guy named Ray DeRossi. And Heather went off the state payroll. She was working for the Speaker of the House. She went off the state payroll to draw these district lines in a hotel room about, 500 feet away from the state house.
We should say that the Blessing family have been in the House and Senate over the years, so in case people don't know that connection.
And so what's kind of interesting is to think about, this is something that we think of as an important governmental function. We have a representative democracy that the legislature draws these district lines actually in secret and hands it off to consultants is really upsetting. Now, we know from public records that they actually called their hotel room that they drew the district lines in the bunker.
And there wasn't any transparency in the sense that when they had those maps, those draft maps done, it wasn't put out for public comment saying, do you like them or not? Does it make sense? They were immediately voted on, in the General Assembly with no opportunity really for others to have much input into the process.
Now, we should point out that while this has been done this time around and generally many would say favored the Republican Party, it's worked both ways. It's worked with the Democrats as well.
Absolutely. When the Democrats were in power in Ohio, they did the exact same thing. That's why, from the League of Women Voters' point of view, this really is a nonpartisan issue. You know, and I worry that folks think of it as just a Democrat-Republican thing, because whoever's in the power has the control. And for us also, I mean, it's we want the elections to be fair, but I am very worried that it discouraged voters. That people, I've heard a lot of people who don't vote because why bother? He's going to get in anyway, because the district is drawn in such a way that they're absolutely sure that an incumbent or a particular person in a party is going to get in. It really discourages the public participation that we need to have a healthy democracy.
Dan?
Yeah, I think what you've seen, not only in Ohio, but across the country, is incumbent politicians drawing district lines in a way that serves their own interests and those of their political cronies very well, but doesn't serve the interests of the people. Because for almost all of our districts, both congressional districts and state legislative districts, we know with a virtual certainty the outcome in advance. And when you've got so many safe seats and so few that are genuinely competitive, you don't have real democratic accountability. So whatever it is, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, a liberal or a conservative, whether the issue that you care about most is education or firearms or taxes or health care or jobs or national security, whatever it is, our current system isn't working very well. And I think that explains a lot of the frustration that you hear and feel from people nowadays across the ideological spectrum, a frustration that our elected representatives are no longer serving our interests, but increasingly serving the interests of themselves and their political cronies.
Now, let's talk about a couple of the requirements made when drawing a district. First of all, a district is supposed to be compact, and a district, according to the Constitution, and a district is supposed to be contiguous to some extent. So you can't have part of a district in the southern part of a state and then part of northern part of a state and call that all one district. Is that correct? Am I describing that correctly?
So when you think about the districts, when it comes to Congress, there really are very few rules. There's what we call one person, one vote, meaning that you, in fact, the district should be approximately the same size when it comes to population. But if compactness was a requirement, we would not have a district that starts in Toledo and works its way all the way over to Cleveland. You can look at that crazy district lines and know that compactness is actually not a requirement. And they managed to get away with splitting up communities willy-nilly. Summit County, which is where Akron is actually divided into four congressional districts. And the other one that I think is crazy is Mercer County, which is on the Indiana border. It's north of here, north of Cincinnati. And that's one that's divided, this little tiny county, very low population, divided into three congressional districts.
Yeah, and you can look at the Ohio maps and see lots of crazy districts. They don't just look crazy. They really are crazy. There's nothing but political gamesmanship that explains the way they're drawn. Another good example of this is the so-called Snake on the Lake, the district, that congressional district that goes all the way from Toledo to Cleveland. You talked about districts being contiguous. At least we think districts should be contiguous. Well, it turns out not only can you not drive through this district without going into another, but you can't even walk through it. I tried going through the McGee Marsh State Park, where there are actually no people living there, but there's a bit of a marsh and a swamp that you can't even walk through unless you have waders. And it shows you the crazy lengths to which our elected officials will go to draw districts that maximize their partisan advantage.
Now, Ruthie wrote in, and she wanted to cite Steve Shabbat's district, the first district here in Ohio, as an example of gerrymandering. Is this gerrymandering? What is it? Can you explain that?
Yeah, let me take a shot at it. Gerrymandering is a term used that essentially describes the drawing of district lines to maximize political advantage. And usually when we talk about gerrymandering, we're talking about partisan gerrymandering. That means the dominant party using its power to basically lock itself in to ensure that it will control either the state legislature or the congressional delegation throughout the decade. And Ohio is a textbook example of this with respect to both our congressional districts, 12 of 16 of which favor Republicans, and our state legislative districts, roughly two-thirds of which, more than that in the Ohio Senate, favor the dominant party, the Republican Party. Democrats and Republicans both engage in such partisan gerrymandering. It just so happens that this last time around it was Republicans rather than Democrats who held the pen here, but the opposite has been true in other states.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think when you look at Hamilton County, where Cincinnati is, it's split down the middle pretty much, or not exactly the middle, but it's split in half, even though my understanding is the county itself would make a fair-sized district just if you took that Hamilton County. But instead it was split, and the reason was that the center part of the county tends to be more Democrat. And so when you combine a few Democrats with a whole lot of Republican in a district that goes way, way on the east side, way out into many rural counties, and then in the west side, you know, goes up into many counties, and that Democratic voice then gets totally lost, and you can be pretty sure that those districts are going to stay Republican. And I think it's important in time. We've had this gerrymandering forever. I mean, it's been
going— But isn't it illegal? Isn't gerrymandering technically illegal?
One of the things that is depressing is that, in fact, right now, it is not, in fact, unconstitutional to draw those district lines in a way that maximizes partisan advantage. Now, the thing that I always think is really crazy is the gerrymandering is named after Elbridge Gerry, who was a founding father. He signed the Declaration of Independence. This is a guy who advocated for the Bill of Rights, but when he was governor, he put party before he put the people. And so Gerry is part of his name, and salamander, because it was a district that looked like a salamander, is gerrymandering. And so if you think about like Brangelina, it's the same kind of idea. And I think—
But they've broken up, so who knows what happened.
Well, and you know, this brings a good point. So fortunately, we have a constitutional scholar on here who can tell you a little bit about Whitford v. Gill, because there is a case that's working its way to the Supreme Court. Dan, do you want to tell a little bit about that?
Sure. And let me just respond first to the question, is gerrymandering legal? Well, at least if we're talking about partisan gerrymandering, it's a bit unclear. We've had three cases decided by the Supreme Court going back to 1986. There hasn't been a majority opinion for the Supreme Court in any of these cases. There hasn't been an opinion that commanded five votes among the nine Supreme Court justices, which means the law on whether and if so when partisan gerrymandering violates the United States Constitution has been for upwards of three decades unclear. We may get some clarity in the case that Catherine mentioned, Gill versus Whitford, which the Supreme Court will probably hear argument on sometime in the coming year. This is a case out of the state of Wisconsin, which involves a pretty egregious gerrymander. They've got a new way of measuring how great the advantage given to the dominant party was in that case. And we'll have to see whether the Supreme Court in this case is finally, after more than three decades, able to come up with a line for when partisan gerrymandering is constitutional and when, if ever, it violates the highest law in the land, the United States Constitution.
Elizabeth, I'm going to let you talk as soon as we come back. We're about to take a break right now. We're going to continue our discussion about congressional redistricting in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about congressional redistricting in Ohio. Joining me are League of Women Voters of the Cincinnati Area Vice President Elizabeth Brown, Chief Policy Analyst with Common Cause Ohio Catherine Terser, and Charles W. Ebersole and Florence Whitcomb Ebersole, Professor of Constitutional Law at the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law, Daniel Takagi, and he is on the phone with us today. You also can be on the phone and join our conversation by giving us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or post a question on Facebook or Twitter. We were talking about gerrymandering as we went to the break. Elizabeth, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that it's become more of a problem because of the ability today to use computers to find out exactly, you know, where the line should be drawn if that's what your partisan interest is. I mean, they not only know what your registered party is from the voter records, they also will use things like, you know, data mine things like what magazines you read and all kinds of other information that we can now collect. I mean, they can do it with such pinpoint precision that they will, you know, if a line goes down the middle of a street, they may dip over to the other side and pick up a few households on that side in order to make the balance that the whoever's drawing it is looking for. So it's a bigger problem today than it ever was.
And one of the things that I think is extremely sad is when we think about a competitive race, we're usually talking about 5 points. In 2016, the average was 36 points.
So if it's not as close as 5 points, then it's not considered competitive.
And when you start to think about the races are so uncompetitive when it comes to Congress that we're not even having good policy debates. And so, you know, when you think about the importance of an election, there's one thing about not having real elections, which is just so disheartening because how do we hold these folks accountable? But also during the election process, when, you know, the incumbent has such an advantage because of both gerrymandering and money, then you have a situation where the challenger poses no threat, and it, you know, leads to fewer debates. It leads to fewer public discussions about all sorts of different ideas.
About the incentives that this creates for the people that we elect to Congress and the state legislature. Look, in our last election, the closest congressional race was around 20 points. So if you're in a Republican district and you're a Republican, you can be very confident you're going to win. Same is true of Democrats in our 4 Democratic congressional districts. And what kind of incentive does that create for the people in office? Well, they don't have to worry about moderate voters, about those in the middle. The only thing they really have to worry about if they want to hold on to their seats is pleasing their base. And that has negative effects on the way that our government works. There's very little incentive to compromise, and there is a lot of incentive for both Republicans and Democrats to tack towards the extreme.
We did get a question from Vince who says that any districting is essentially unfair, so why not do away with it altogether? Is there an option to just do away with it altogether?
Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say there are degrees of unfairness, and we are at the very highest degree of unfairness. You could imagine getting rid of congressional districts entirely, and it wouldn't violate our Constitution, the United States Constitution, that is, but it would violate federal law, which generally requires that members of Congress be elected from single-member districts.
You said it's the worst it's ever been now. Why is it so bad now as compared to 20 or 30 or 50 or even 100 years ago?
It's those computers. It's the knowledge that they have about who those constituents
are. So they're just better at it.
Exactly.
It's not so much that they're trying any harder or less hard. It's just that they can do it so much more easily.
Exactly.
I also think it's a function of the fact that partisanship has increased for a number of reasons, not limited to the way the districts are drawn, and the increased polarization of our politics, which is well documented, has increased dramatically over the past 40 years, creates stronger and stronger incentives for whichever political party is in charge to lock itself in and lock everybody from the opposite party out.
Well, let's talk about state districts in Ohio, because this was a serious concern for many people up until about 2015 and when some new laws were passed. So let's talk about that, how those districts are drawn and how they're drawn differently now thanks to a vote in 2015.
So we have had a long conversation how best to reform the way that we draw legislative district lines. And so fortunately, after a number of ballot measures that were put on by citizen efforts, the state legislature in 2014, also after having the Constitutional Modernization Commission and lots of different conversations, and when you had two leaders that were term limited out and the Speaker of the House was term limited out, so it's a little bit easier to focus on legacy building, they managed in December, in that lame duck session, to actually pass state legislative redistricting reform. Now, what that did is it put state legislative redistricting reform on the ballot for voters to pass, because any change to the Ohio Constitution has to be approved by the voters.
Okay.
And there, we worked hard. I mean, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, a lot of citizen groups had been working for decades and decades to get this reform.
Yeah, it's insane to think about. Like, so someone like Joan Lawrence, who state rep from up in my neck of the woods in central Ohio, 1981 was the first ballot measure about redistricting reform. When the League talks about, hey, we've been working at this for a really long time, well, for 35 years.
So has it made a difference?
Well, it hasn't. I mean, we passed it. We're very pleased with what the program hopefully will be. But as we talked before, you don't redistrict until you have a census. So it really hasn't been put into place. We have the system there, but now we're waiting for the 2020 census to really put that system into place. A lot of people don't understand, though, that the congressional districts were not included in that reform.
Strictly the state districts.
Strictly the state. I mean, the original proposal was to have both.
Well, that's because this guy named John Boehner
decided
he really did not want to include congressional districts.
So now we have to go to the phase two to complete this program of redistricting reform and look at the congressional districts. And that's what we've done. I mean, Catherine can maybe talk about the proposal that now is, I don't know if you call it on the table, but the General Assembly has not chosen. Well, maybe it doesn't have those same bipartisan support or people that are term limited, but they've chosen not to take this up, not to pass something that the citizens could vote on. And so now we're arranging a citizen referendum. So we're going to begin circulating petitions with a proposal to do that redistricting.
Well, let's wait. Before we get right into that, I want to ask Dan one question, then I'm going to get to that. Dan, can you talk about the change in the state districts and what kind of change you expect in 2020 with the new census?
Certainly. So first, let me say it is a remarkable achievement for which Common Cause and the League of Women Voters deserve a great deal of credit. And also, let's give some credit to those in our state legislature who propose this referendum that was ultimately approved by voters to change the way that state legislative districts are drawn. This is pretty unusual. It is really quite unusual for the parties to be able to come together and agree going forward on redistricting reform. It really doesn't happen much in any state. What allowed it to happen for our state legislative districts in Ohio is the fact that there was uncertainty, right? Neither Democrats nor Republicans knew who was going to be holding the pen to draw those districts in 2021 when the districts will next be drawn. And that uncertainty led both sides to come to the table and agree to this proposal. The most important element of this proposal is that it will require bipartisan consensus on this new redistricting commission in order to draw a plan that will remain in effect for the full decade. If there's not bipartisan consensus, then the plan will only remain in effect for 4 years. That's important because the parties won't know who will control it 4 years down the line. So the hope is that this new proposal that will be in effect in 2021 will induce some degree of bipartisan compromise and will give us fairer districts than we've had in the last several redistricting cycles. And I think it has a good chance of succeeding.
Is this sort of like when you have the two brothers that have want a piece of cake and the mom says, okay, you cut and you choose? You know?
It is kind of like that, right? And this is really the key, not only to redistricting, but a lot of political reform, is creating the right incentives so that the parties will cooperate. Because let me tell you, if you watch politics carefully, it's pretty clear they're not going to do it on their own.
Well, and I have to say, I actually really like that there are good rules now, too. So the rules about keeping, you know, communities together, keeping cities together, keeping townships together. But there's also good rules, the prohibition of partisan gerrymandering. You cannot create districts that favor or disfavor one party over the other.
And but if they do, what happens? Can it go to court?
We will sue. I will promise. If it's not done and the law says it has to be done, the Constitution at that point, the state Constitution says you cannot do the political gerrymandering and they still do it, it will go to court.
How much time do you have to draw it? If the census is done in 2020, and those results don't come out for what, a year?
It generally takes about 9 months. They generally start in January, kind of getting all ready, and they will finalize them generally September, October.
So how much time do you have to draw those districts then before the first vote will occur under the new district?
So it'll be November of the next year, but you'll have the primary before.
So there's so not just, a ton of time.
Not a ton of time. So we'd be talking about the May primary. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get back now. So we've sort of established what's happening with state districts in Ohio, and that's something to keep an eye on over the next few years as that new law comes into play. Let's talk about the congressional districts and some of the proposals that are in place. And which one of you wanted to start?
Catherine, you want to talk about the basic proposal?
So issue 1 of 2015 passed by more than 71% of the vote.
That's the state issue.
Mm-hmm. And it won in every single county, 88 counties. And I thought, hey, this is a mandate. The state legislature will naturally take up congressional redistricting reform because it's very clear that voters came together, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents came together to pass this, and that, in fact, they have a mandate, except for they just didn't ever do anything. And so then there comes a point where you need to actually do a citizens' initiative, because we need to actually get this on the ballot and have voters pass it before we do the redistricting in 2021. So this does – it's very similar. So, you know, what's good for the state house is good for Congress. So it establishes a bipartisan commission to do the map making. It focuses on keeping communities together. So if you can keep a county together, you keep the county together. You keep the city together. You keep the city together. You keep the township together. It also has that prohibition on gerrymandering. And as we think about the importance of keeping those communities together – and we think about the problems that happen, which are all about, you know, partisan shenanigans. These are the kinds of things that will make a tremendous difference. So now we started collecting signatures, I guess the 24th of April, and we started collecting signatures. We handed them in to the attorney general, because what you do is you hand the first 1,000 in to the attorney general, and he decides whether the summary works or not.
And the summary is the language explaining what this is all about.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a summary, and so you can actually have a little bit of a debate over, well, does the summary have enough information? And the attorney general on Thursday decided that our summary was not quite adequate. He identified a couple different things that we needed to add. And so on Friday, we basically revamped it and we started collecting signatures this weekend.
So you have to collect signatures again then once you revamp the language.
So we do another 1,000 and then we go through this process again with the attorney general.
So it has to be approved by the attorney general. And then when he approves it, it goes to the state ballot board, which needs to approve the language. Again, approve the language, not the substance of the idea, but the language. And so we need those approvals before we go do the massive circulation of petitions in order to collect enough to get it on the ballot.
And so how many do you need to get it on the ballot then?
More than 300,000.
Yeah, I think it's 300, 5,000. And usually it's recommended you collect almost double that.
Because of the ones that will be rejected?
Be rejected, or they're illegible, or somebody's moved between the time they signed it and it was turned in, whatever the problem is, that in order to be really safe, they suggest double that, and that's what we're aiming for. But we're organizing to do that. We're doing trainings. I spent the weekend up in Cuyahoga Falls at a state League of Women Voters convention, and all of the 31 chapters of the League in Ohio are really excited and energized. And I actually had the opportunity. I mean, it took them, 2 days to rewrite their summary the way the attorney general wanted. So I've now signed the second set of 1,000 petitions. So we're ready to go out. But it's, you know, Ohio allows for citizen initiatives, but they make it pretty difficult to do. And it's a fairly expensive process. I mean, to gather that many, you have to have that many total. And then you also have to have them from at least half of the counties, not just one or two.
So you can't get them all in Cleveland, for example.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. I think it's 5% of the voters in the last what is gubernatorial?
That's gubernatorial. So, as somebody who at one point lived in the middle of nowhere, I'm really glad that we have direct democracy that honors almost all of Ohio, that you don't have it where you can just get them in Cincinnati or you can just get them in Cleveland. I think that's a really good thing. I did want to highlight that on Thursday at noon, this is Thursday, May 11th at noon, there is a discussion about redistricting reform. And this is at Christ Church Cathedral. This is a lunch kind of time at noon. And that's 318 East 4th Street, and that's just downtown Cincinnati.
And Dan, I want to get Dan in the discussion about all of this. Talk a little bit about the whole idea of gathering, getting these petition signs and gathering this all in and sort of the approving of the language. Is there politics involved in that even itself?
I'm afraid so. So first of all, on the signature gathering part, well, there's not so much politics in that as there is a need for money, right? And the reality of direct democracy, much as we like to think of its purpose as citizen empowerment, is that it takes money to get an initiative qualified for the ballot and a significant amount of money. I should say this in the interest of full disclosure, as one of the people who was responsible for a 2012 proposal that would have reformed both congressional and state legislative redistricting. It's expensive. Where the politics really comes in is with the ballot board, which is headed by the Secretary of State, choosing the language that voters will see. And here's the thing about, well, almost all ballot initiatives, but especially ones involving redistricting. If voters are confused, they tend to vote no. And when it comes to redistricting, it is not too difficult to confuse voters because this is a confusing subject about which your average voter really doesn't come in with a lot of advanced information. And so what happened back in 2012 is that our Secretary of State and the ballot board wrote some very confusing language that got struck down by the court and went on to write some more language that was just a little bit better enough to survive judicial review. The bottom line is that it is very easy for the ballot board to write language, if it chooses to do so, that will create an uphill battle for those seeking to enact an initiative.
Well, you also have the problem sometimes where things get on the ballot and yes means no and no means yes, and all of that confusion can go on, and sometimes on purpose, because people know, as Dan, you said, that if people don't understand it, they're going to vote no. So if you can make no mean yes by the language, then that's your benefit.
Right. And that's why we've gone, as far as we can to make this as simple and clear as possible and have followed the model of the successful state redistricting campaign, which, as Catherine said, passed by 71% with overwhelming support. So a lot of the language sort of tracks the same. It's the same idea. You've heard this before. One of the things we have to explain is, I thought we did this. Why are we doing this again? And have to explain the difference between the state and congressional districts. And it is expensive, and I don't mean to say it's not, but, the number of volunteers and the enthusiasm that I have seen, folks are coming out of the woodwork, wanting to help us collect petitions. I mean, we will be at every fair, every outdoor event, through the summer, and people are really active. They want to do this. They want to do something, and this gives them a really good way to get involved and to improve their government.
This is Cincinnati Edition. We're talking about congressional redistricting, and we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about the way the districts are drawn and the way the congressional representatives are chosen? Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You also can email talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook or Twitter. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. We continue our discussion about congressional redistricting. My guests are League of Women Voters of the Cincinnati Area Vice President Elizabeth Brown, Chief Policy Analyst with Common Cause Ohio Catherine Terser, and Charles W. Ebersold and Florence Whitcomb Ebersold, Professor of Constitutional Law at The Ohio State University Moritz College of Law, Daniel Takagi. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. 7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook or Twitter, so you can get a hold of us there as well. And Elizabeth, you want to talk a little bit about the League of Women Voters and your role in all of this. What is the League's overreach of all of this?
Right. As I was saying, we really are into this campaign and very energized by it. But the League also does all the voter education work, publishes that voter guide, which we will be doing this November again. We do an online version called Vote 411, which takes a lot of volunteer time and effort to get all those officials or politicians that are running to give us information on it. So the voter education piece, the piece not just to get people out to vote, not just to register them, but to make sure that they're informed voters, has to go on. I think this campaign for fair districts is really important to encourage people to vote, to encourage them to learn about their different politicians.
And you're trying to get this on the ballot in 2018, is that right? Is that the goal?
Right. Well, our goal is to get it. We're going to collect petitions until we get enough to submit. The chances right now of getting them on the 2017 ballot are pretty much gone. So it will probably be 2018.
But again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. I want to get to Mark in Montgomery, who just called in. Hi, Mark. What's your question?
More to come, but how many people do your speakers think thought that they were voting for congressional redistricting? Because I certainly did.
When you voted for the state redistricting, you mean?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Do you think there's going to be some confusion with that?
So I would definitely say that there's going to be a little bit of confusion about, hey, didn't we already do this? And I think, it is up to us to let people know that, in fact, that that's not the case. One of the things that surprised me, I saw polling fairly recently that suggested that there were 30% of people who knew that it did not include Congress.
30% only.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, you're one of those people. Will you find it more difficult to vote again? Or did maybe today's show helped you realize the difference? How are you? What are you thinking about that?
Oh, no. I will hopefully get down to Christchurch and see if there's some way I can volunteer, because I think this – I applaud the state reps for allowing this to happen. But I also think it should happen on the national side.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling, Mark. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Again, our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. Tim's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Tim.
Yes. I wonder if there's ultimately a disadvantage to the party that plays a role in gerrymandering districts to their advantage, in that it creates the primary election as the main venue for competition, and those races tend to go to the base. And so I'm wondering, Republicans are right now bearing the bitter fruit of their successors having gerrymandered some very safe districts, and yet those districts then turn out Republicans that are to the extreme, the Liberty Caucus, if you will.
Let Dan respond to your question.
It's a great question and a great point. And I actually agree that even though the incentives of the dominant party are both to maximize its share of seats and to draw safe districts so that even in a strong year for the other party, they'll still have a majority in the state legislature or the congressional delegation. There's a downside to that, which is underappreciated. If you've got a district that's, say, 60% or 70% Republican, you don't have to worry much about losing to a Democrat, but you do have to worry about the extremes of your own party. And the same is true if you're a Democrat in a 70% Democratic district. And I do think that this is a part of what led people in our state legislature to support state legislative redistricting reform, right? This concern that, boy, we're increasingly being dominated by those who are at the extremes of our own party. Why hasn't that same concern arisen, at least to the same extent, with respect to congressional redistricting? And I think the answer to that is, again, think about it in terms of incentives, right? For congressional districting, Republicans can be pretty sure that they will have at least a say in how districts are drawn if there's no reform. They can be pretty confident that they're going to still control both chambers of the state legislature in 2021. The same wasn't true of the Redistricting Commission, which is responsible for drawing state legislative lines, and I think that's the main reason why we have gotten reform for state legislative districts with the cooperation of those in our state legislature, but we haven't yet seen the same level of cooperation on congressional redistricting reform.
Yeah.
Tim, thank you so much for your question. We appreciate it. Thank you. Elizabeth?
I was going to say, you do have changes. When the districts are manipulated to that extent, I mean, the changes that the caller were talking about and that Dan was talking about clearly happened. I mean, there are other things also. I mean, if you live in a district that is so overwhelmingly one party or another, and all the action is in the primary, a lot of people who consider themselves independents or maybe are leaning in the other direction will register as that party. I mean, in Ohio, you can go in and ask for a primary ballot from either party, and then you are considered registered in that party until the next election and you choose to do something else. And so probably there are a lot of people who are listed as registered in one party who, if these things became fair and competitive, may make other choices if there's actually, you know, competitive elections going on.
Well, and I look at it this way. You know, we all as Americans want to see our representative democracy work. And gerrymandering or the manipulation of these districts, they warp the election, which violates the will of the people. And so I sometimes think that we're thinking about the Democrats being the most in favor of dealing with gerrymandering. Let's get on this. But in fact, this is not good for anybody. It's not good for our government. It is genuinely a problem for Democrats, Republicans, and independents.
I guess I'd just put one caveat on that, which is that it's good for some politicians who really care more than anything else about getting reelected. And that's why, you know, we've talked about this at least to some extent in Ohio.
Dan, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you so much. I want to thank you all for being here. We could have gone on and on and on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking about congressional redistricting in Ohio. My guests were League of Women Voters of the Cincinnati Area Vice President, Elizabeth Brown, Chief Policy Analyst with Common Cause Ohio, Catherine Terser, and Professor of Constitutional Law at the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law, Dan Takagi. Thank you so much.